Hey everyone, welcome to the Grove Collective Podcast. Matt, welcome to the Grove Collective Podcast.
Thanks, Nate.
Yeah, man, we're so excited to have you on. So the goal is, I just had this theme over and over in my head, pastor as person. And what I wanted to do is I wanted to give our church and everybody watching an opportunity to get to know you a little bit more, Matt. And I have gotten to know you over the years. And one of the things that I realize is that you have been one of the longest standing Grove, active Grove employees.
Right.
Right?
Yeah.
And you have done, I feel like, almost every area of ministry here at the Grove. When I first met you, you were a student pastor. And now, since then, you've moved into overseeing our counseling ministry here at the Grove. And you're also our associate pastor here. But it always wasn't that way. I want you to tell us, how did your time at the Grove begin?
Oh my goodness. I don't even know if you know this.
I probably don't.
It's crazy. I'm going to blow your mind.
Okay. All right.
So it started, I started as a summer intern in 2004.
I think I did know that.
Dude, but that's not, So I was a youth intern. Needed that kind of for a class that in my youth ministry program.
Yeah.
Did that over the summer. Went back to school, finished my degree, and then in 2005, in like May of 2005, I came back and took the same internship again. And that turned into my student ministries role, where I was the junior high pastor and the fifth and sixth grade pastor for, man, I want to say 12, 13 years, something like that. But in that time, this is crazy, the early days of the Grove, we moved on to our campus at the end of 2006, and Palmer calls me up and he's like, or calls me in his office and he's like, hey, we need something. Would you be willing to help us with this? And before I knew it, I had agreed to go out into our construction here before this building was built. And I was out in the heat digging ditches, laying PVC pipe for our irrigation sleeves for like an entire summer. And it was awesome.
It was awesome, he
says. It really was.
Okay, I'm not surprised by two things in this story. I'm not surprised at your selfless heart. And I'm not surprised at how Palmer was able to get you to do some manual labor
this
and digging
true.
Up some trenches and
this
laying some PVC pipe.
Yeah,
awesome.
This is true. He's like, we need you here.
Yeah.
We need you to go to the field.
So he's good at that.
Yeah,
man.
He's good at that.
Yeah.
And then the other thing you might not have known, when we first moved onto our campus, we had our coffee shop open just on Sundays when we had church. But none of us pastors like had really, well, how do we do a coffee shop and stuff? So I had worked at Starbucks right before I went full-time here. So I wrote all of the original recipes and helped launch our coffee
shop.
Yeah,
wow.
For part-time hours when we first came onto our campus as well. I helped the lady that was brought on to do be our manager there and stuff.
Damn.
So I like wrote and trained all our first baristas, wrote all the recipes and trained all the first baristas
wow,
at Grove
man.
Coffee. Little known fact.
I didn't know that you worked at Starbucks.
I did.
Look
so,
at that.
Yeah, so in 05, when I took that internship again, I was doing Starbucks and I was doing the internship. And then again, Palmer called me in and he said, hey, we need you to go full time. We need you to quit Starbucks. I'm like, done.
Yeah.
Like I loved it, but
were you so excited? Like that's been what your heart was longing for, was full-time ministry?
It was. I mean, it's what my degree was in.
Yeah.
It's what I felt called to do. And so I was in that place of waiting for it to become a reality.
Yeah.
And
well, and you didn't just wait though.
Right.
You know?
I was
and
doing
I feel
it.
Like that's why I wanted to do this podcast. It's like people ask me all the time, how did you become a pastor? I want to be a pastor. I want to be in full-time ministry. Well, your story is a perfect example of how you became a pastor. You didn't just wait and you didn't just go to school. You were serving and not even in areas that were aligned with your schooling. You served however you could.
Right.
You know?
Right.
Yeah.
Even in college, I jumped in and started serving with a youth group in near where I went to school in Chicago. And it was really interesting. It was the anniversary of 9/11. Okay, so the 1 year mark, September 11th of 2002. And I checked out this church for the first time. They had a special service. And I remember walking in and I'm looking for a church, but I'm looking for a place to connect with students, right? So I went and I purposely sat with a group of high school kids up in the front row. And before I knew it, they were like, hey, let's go get some food after. And that became, you know, it became my heart starting to align with, oh my gosh, I'm supposed to do ministry.
Yeah, yeah. So. Well, I think that speaks a little bit to your heart too. And your heart for students, your heart for ministry, your heart for people, and the fact that you sought them out. Like most people, me, like I'm gonna go sit, not really engage anyone, I'm really introverted. You sought those students out. And I can remember when I first showed up to the Grove, and this was about 7 years ago, and when I first met you, I'll never forget how intentional you were. Mm-hmm. I remember I left the coffee shop and you showed me around all of the student ministry spaces. And simple things, man, like your eye contact, your smile, mm-hmm. but even the way that you engage me, you were genuinely interested about me. And I remember leaving my time with you and I was like, dang, if everybody is like Matt at the Grove, I want to work here, you know? Mm-hmm. And I want you to talk about where does that come from, you mm-hmm. know? I feel like for all of us or for a lot of us, our past experiences kind of shape us. Mm. So the fact that you're so intentional, that you seek people out, that you're filled with this joy, and it kind of radiates, where does that come from for you?
Yeah, it's interesting, because maybe this is true of a lot of people, but it comes from pain, actually. And you know, we can do things because that's how it was shown to us.
Yeah.
And that's part of it. My parents were great examples of that.
Yeah.
But we could also do things because of what we didn't get and what we needed
yes.
and fell short. I think you can become a victim if that happens to
totally.
You.
Totally.
Or you can do it differently for the people you're with.
Yeah.
And so for me, it was a little bit of that. I felt invisible. I felt invisible in high school. I felt like, you know, there's being bullied in high school.
Yeah.
And that wasn't my story. I wasn't picked on. I was just ignored.
Yeah.
Like, I was always the new kid. Mm. It seemed like every 2 years I was in a new school, for example. Yeah. And people were full up. They had their friend list. They didn't want any new friends. And so I think the intentionality started with, I felt like no one knew me in high school. Like, it was interesting. I wondered if you would have polled everyone at my graduation, how many of them knows Matt Shively.
Mm.
Matt Shively. I wondered if any of them, you know,
really?
Were. And that a lot of that's internal, right?
Yeah, I'm but sure. still.
So instead of being a victim of that, I'm like, well, I can be intentional with other people.
Yeah.
That I can do.
Yeah.
And so I've struggled with like feeling rejected through the years, even since then, right?
Yeah.
But I know that I can be like the person that you know in the room.
Yeah.
I can do that for you.
Yeah.
I want you to feel loved, known,
totally.
Valued,
yeah.
these things. So when I was called to youth ministry, guess what kind of kid I was drawn to?
Mm.
The kid that was on the outskirts.
Yeah.
The kid that no one knew.
Yep.
The kid that no one seemed to notice or want around.
Mm.
So I became, you know, a little bit of a magnet for the fringe kid, as we kind of called it in youth ministry. The kid that's, they're there, but they're not in,
right.
you know, and nobody really sees them.
They don't feel like they belong.
Yeah.
They don't feel like they're seen.
Yeah.
They don't feel like they're valued, for sure, man.
Yeah. So the fringe kid was always, I have to be careful how I enunciate that. It sounds like I'm saying the French kid, which they're great too. But so I'm always drawn to the kids that are kind of hanging on the fringes a little bit. They need that love. The kids that, unfortunately, in our society today, those are the same kids that are hurting and do horrible things when they don't get love, you know? So it's definitely a mission field for me. But now that I'm out of youth ministry, there's people that need that kind of intentionality and it fits really well with what I do.
Totally. I think you're doing the same thing. You're just doing it with a different population.
Right.
One of the things that I learned, and I was reading a book that Brené Brown wrote. Mm-hmm. She said the way that we human beings experience love is we're seen, we're heard, and then we're valued. And this is what rocked me about this. If you look at social media, right? I'm gonna talk about Instagram because Instagram is what I'm familiar with.
Right.
And so if anybody's familiar with Instagram, you can follow along with this example. What does everybody do on Instagram? Typically, if you're not just surfing, right? You post a picture. And typically, who is that picture of?
Yourself.
Yourself. Yeah. You wanna be seen. And this is what social media has done. They have they're monetizing our heart and our need and our longing. So I post a picture of myself because I want to be seen. What do I usually type beneath that picture? A caption.
Mm-hmm.
I share my heart. Mm-hmm. I want to be heard. And then what usually happens if my picture and my caption resonates with someone?
They like it.
They double tap.
They comment on it.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. And that validates my need or desire to want to be seen, heard, and valued. And that's how we experience love. Mm. And when I encounter someone like you, I think what you do for our world is you draw me out of my digital space and into reality and I experience love in real life, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. I'm seen, mm-hmm. I'm heard, mm-hmm. and I'm valued. So you've done that with students over the years, and now you're doing that with anybody and everybody, really, you know?
Yeah.
So I think that's been so cool for me to see about what you do, man.
In a one-on-one counseling situation, that's what the person wants first, is to know they're heard,
know they're
understood. And then in a couples or a family session, they want to be heard within each other.
Yes.
There's something causing that not to happen. A friction,
totally.
A misunderstanding, miscommunication.
Yeah.
And the different branches of the military, they have these different like kind of mottos that they kind of, when they're asked to give, they're given a command from their officer, right? The Army, for example. Mm. They're supposed to say back to their officer, Hua, right? Have you heard this?
Yeah, I've heard Hua before, but I don't know.
Did you know it stands for something?
Not at all.
Dude, heard, understood, acknowledged.
Oh, that's good.
And so that's what they want.
I tell my kids that. They better say Hua back.
That's right.
Yeah.
But that's what we were looking for.
Yeah.
When we want to connect with our spouse or, you know, we just want to be loved. Like you said, we want to be heard. We want to be understood, acknowledged, slash valued.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I feel like we've kind of, my conversation and the questions I have for you are just going in this trajectory, but you have this ability to sit with people, to feel what they're feeling, and I think that it's truly healing. Talk to me about that skill, and I want to say that you've developed.
Yeah.
I would like to believe it's a skill that can be developed. Is it a skill that you've developed? Is it something that you feel like you were just naturally gifted with? Does it come from your past experiences of you feel like not being seen, not being heard, not being listened to?
Yeah, probably.
Yeah,
that's probably
all
part
of the above.
Of that. Yeah, I think all of the above. Definitely some skills that you learn.
Yeah.
I remember when my first master's class, I took a class called Counseling Skills, and it was probably my favorite class I've ever had because it was very hands-on, and we practiced it as we learned it. But I remember, in a lot of ways, I was concerned with kind of if I would go there.
Yeah.
There's a risk. There's a risk to be intentional with people.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe we know it, but we don't always say it out loud. Like, because if we're gonna sit and be with somebody who's hurting, we could get some of that hurt on us.
Mm-hmm.
That's the risk always.
For sure.
And one of the things I realized is, if I can be that person for someone, I don't find that as a burden at all. And maybe that's me, I don't know.
Yeah.
But
I think that is you.
But the skill is just listening. Listening is a skill, it really is.
It is.
And learning how to be an active listener.
I've been really eager to actually ask this question, have this conversation too. One of the things that you and I have talked about in depth and in detail over the years is things like depression and anxiety, and how it's really been plaguing humanity at large. But now, even more so, I feel like we're seeing it really impact our youth on a scale that is not okay, you know? One of the things that I wanted to ask is, why do you think that is, and what can we do to be proactive in fighting against that and helping to bring peace and helping to bring healing to our young people and to everybody who's struggling with these things today?
Yeah, man, it's so hard, man.
Yeah, it is.
It's heartbreaking because it's an uphill climb.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a battle we all face. And I guess my personal mission is to normalize talking about it.
Totally.
And I think that's where it starts.
It wasn't normal to talk about years ago.
Yeah.
It wasn't.
It was taboo. Like, I don't want to talk to a counselor.
Yeah. Something's wrong with you. You know, something's wrong with all of us.
There's, and I don't know the number off the top of my head, but there is a crazy high statistic of how many people are on an antidepressant.
Yes.
And probably if everyone who needs to be on one would be on one, it would probably be even higher. But I also think, you know, antidepressants and stuff, the chemical balance that you're feeling from anxiety and depression, I think medicine can help. I don't think it's always the answer, but
right.
I think that's a touchy subject for
it
sure.
It is.
And I take, as everything in my life, I take the middle on that one.
Yeah.
But I think, I know, can't stop it. But back to your question. You can't blame COVID for everything.
I know.
You can't, but it definitely didn't help.
It didn't help.
It projected out.
It amplified, it sped up.
It was already happening, but it happened faster.
It's been happening. I feel like the last decade, for sure, it's been this slow build.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, but think about what happened during COVID. Everybody was isolated from their safe places, so to speak. Yes, home is their safe space, but their friendship circles that got changed. Yeah. Even school, a lot of kids won't admit to liking school, but it was part of their routine. Now they're trying to learn while also playing Fortnite and looking over their computer screen. You know what I mean? All at the same time.
Literally.
And so the isolation caused a cloud over the already existing cloud of anxiety and depression that was going on. And so it just really perpetuated what was happening. Mm-hmm.
You nailed it. Yeah. Isolation is what happened, mm-hmm. and then disconnection is what followed. Mm-hmm. And we feel like we're connected to these devices, which really just creates even more isolation and more disconnection.
And not to blame another thing that everyone blames for anxiety, but we live in a world with our social media mm-hmm. and things like that we are hyper-connected. And that causes problems on the other end of things.
It does.
And I've heard, again, I don't know the number off the top of my head, but something like our brains were kind of wired to know, almost like have a set amount of relationships.
Mm-hmm. Right? Yeah, I've heard that.
But for some reason in this digital age, right, we have way more relationships than we ever would have without it, which is great.
Relationships,
right.
Right.
But that has opened up this window for, you know, again, like bullying and things on social, I mean, all of the harassment that can happen on there. And so it's actually created a lot of inch deep relationships and very few mile deep relationships.
Yeah.
And I think we were made for, like, to have 15 mile deep relationships and not, you know, a thousand inch deep ones or whatever it is now. So it's created this weird disconnect where we want to be heard, we want to be understood, we want to be valued kind of piece.
Yeah.
But we don't feel that from the avenues that we're told we get that need met.
Yeah. We're being told this is where you find it. Mm-hmm. And so we go to these places to find it, mm-hmm. and we're actually getting the opposite.
Yeah. Yeah.
But it seems like we're getting to this place where we can't break free from that, and we have to. Mm-hmm. Humanity is suffering because of it. We need to do another podcast, and we need to do a deep dive into that.
Yeah.
Seriously. Go over some practical tools of what we can do to fight against the isolation and disconnection that comes from our devices, mm-hmm. but then ways that we can supplement real connection in there, you know?
Yeah.
We definitely need to do that.
I feel busyness is part of the problem too.
Yeah.
We're very, very busy.
Yeah.
And busyness breeds anxiety. Mm-hmm. It just does.
It does.
You know? Now, nothing wrong with being productive, efficient, getting stuff done. I can't tell you, like, when I like have cleared my inbox and I've got a bunch of meetings done and I feel like I was productive in a day, I feel really good. Mm-hmm. I really do. But I need to decompress.
Totally.
I need to have healthy outlets.
Yes.
So many unhealthy outlets are taking the place of where those healthy outlets need to be.
Yeah, seriously. I can think of, I mean, a lot of people, it's like the phone, glass of wine, whatever it is. You know what I mean? We're running to these things and we think that they're going to help us, but they end up just numbing us out even more, you know?
Yeah.
Well, I've got these kind of rapid fire questions that I wanted to ask you.
Lightning round, yes.
If you were given only 30 minutes in a day to work.
Oh.
And you only had 30 minutes. What activity would you choose to do? And this, I want this to align with your passion, your gifting, all of that. Sure. If you're only given 30 minutes a day to do an activity for work, what would you do?
So you remember the thing from like 15 years ago, speed dating?
Uh-huh.
Where you'd like sit at a table like this and there'd be a bunch of women in a row and you would go, then ding, the next. I would do that, but I would just listen to them.
Okay.
And I'd give them 2 minutes to offload.
Okay.
Ding, next. 2 minutes off.
See, I love that. You're supposed to answer with the first thing that comes to your mind, which clearly you did. And I think it shows us our core passion and calling. That's so cool, man.
Yeah. And notice, like, that wouldn't leave any time for me to give them any advice.
Right.
But I think those 2 minutes of being heard, that would be so good for them.
Yeah, it would.
Like, we need to be heard. That's the very first word of those 3 words we've been saying.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, that's good.
One last question I have. What is something that you're doing or experiencing right now in your life that is bringing you joy?
Oh man, that's such a good question. Mm-hmm. I love that. And I feel horrible up to this point. I haven't even mentioned my family, which is really bad. My family is the answer, though, 100%. My wife, Rachel, my three girls. I'm in a house full of estrogen and female energy. Yep. It's amazing. Even our pets, they're all girls. Like, what's even going on? But it's awesome. I love being with them. I love swimming with them, hanging out with them, getting to know them. Time as a family. Night walks with my wife.
Yeah.
Honestly, like, that was the greatest part of COVID for
me.
The greatest part of a horrible season was I had so much intentional time with my family I'd never had before. And I feel like some of that's gone back to normal, so to speak.
Yeah.
But there's been little pieces that we've held on to that I really think have kept us floating. And so yeah, that is in running right now. Man, I'm just loving that right now.
That's awesome.
It's just been a really great outlet for me. And I was telling you, I'm listening through all the Harry Potter books runs.
I love it.
I listen to John Mark Comer's new book, Live No Lies. Yeah. Bob Goff's new book, Undistracted. Listen to that one too. So just catching up on a reading, that's been my personal growth time on top of like the physical outlet of it all.
Yeah.
And I like to run around in my neighborhood, which is really fun. We have these wild cows that enter our neighborhood.
What?
So there's never a dull moment. Yeah. I'll turn a corner and there's four cows right there in my path.
Do they charge you?
No, but they look at me.
They look at you?
And they're like, I see you,
bro.
That's
funny.
Don't make a move.
Man.
Those are a few things, Nate.
Yeah, that's the good stuff. Keep doing that. Matt, thank you so much for being on the podcast today.
Absolutely.
And for everybody joining us and watching or listening. If you don't know Matt, get to know him. He'll definitely bring some more peace to your life. Matt, thank you for joining us today.
Thanks, Nate.
Yeah.